Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at LeBron James and the rest of the always interesting Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm Chris Manning, your host from FearTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers blog. Today's show is another conversation with Tony East, the host of Locked On Pacers. We talked about Game 1, why Victor Oladipo is so good, what adjustments the Cavs need to make, why the pressure is on the Cavs to make the adjustments, and why Indiana should feel very, very good about its Game 1 performance. I still think the Cavs are in a good position to win the series. They should still be the favorites, I think, to win the series, but the pressure is 100% on them to make an advance and to do something different in Game 2. We do not yet know what that would be, what Ty Lue is thinking, but here is Ty Lue real quick from Monday's media availability, just a little hint at what he might be thinking. Plus, his insight on where Tristan and JR currently stand.
JR and Tristan, either one of them had a regular season that they would have liked at the start. But they're two of the four guys who have been here the whole time, who started all the finals. How important is that for you that you know how they respond in a playoff situation?
We've been talking about it as a staff. I just know, you know, those guys have been through everything with us, you know, the last 4 years, and you know, we won a championship, went to 3 finals, and Tristan and JR played a big part of that. So we understand that, and trust me, we know that.
Are you still thinking, we played 10 in the first quarter last night, I know foul trouble led into that, but are you still thinking a 10-man rotation? You
need
to start chopping that down
already.
We got a good day.
We might start chopping down a little bit. We might be chopping down because guys are hurt. So, but yeah, maybe a little bit, Jason.
So there you have Ty Lue. We'll have another episode up tomorrow. Ashley Bastock from Through the Sword and NEO Sports Insiders and the AP Radio will be joining me to talk about what Ty Lue's had to say recently, everything the players have had to say at practice, and then we'll look ahead to Game 2. Recap up, obviously, after Game 2 on Wednesday night. But here's today's show with Tony East of Locked On Pacers.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team. Every day.
NBA fans, Cavalier fans, Pacers fans, just like Saturday, me and Chris Manning of Locked On Cavs are back together to do another Locked On crossover. I'm Tony East with the West Indianapolis Community News. We want to talk about Game 1 to get some feeling on the game, but first, I want to get a feeling on how you're doing, Chris.
Yeah, I'm doing good. Being in person at the game was one of the more fascinating Cavs playoff games I've been to for a variety of reasons. Anyone that watched the game or at least knows what happened in that game, I think has a good idea of why. And the comments post-game from everybody were pretty interesting. But in all, a more eventful Sunday in Cleveland than I think you and I were both expecting when we talked on Saturday.
Were the boos as loud as they sounded on TV?
Yes, but at the same time, like the pivots cheering was just as loud as yeah. I don't know how that came across on TV, but it was when the emotion of the crowd and the distaste and then the euphoria that the crowd had when J.R. Smith got rolling in that third quarter for a little bit were massive. It was a very tense environment. It felt like a playoff game in that sense, at the very least.
Less about actual basketball, more about me feeling. But when JR started heating up, I thought 100% Cavs were going to come back. I was like, JR's the guy who could do this for the Cavs right now. Of course he's heating up.
Yeah, you know, I thought him playing well was a sign of things to come. I thought LeBron was going to kind of do LeBron in all caps or LeVine, if you want to go that way. But I thought he was going to do that type of stuff, and then he just wasn't his full dominant self to some degree in this game. But I agree with you. I thought when JR was playing well, that's normally a sign that things are going well for the Cavs. And he usually is just this momentum builder, but it didn't turn out that way. They got within 7 in the fourth, and then it just kind of fell apart again.
Yeah, I think everyone is surprised by the results, including, you know, just the flow of play, like Indiana leading from start to finish. I think 2-2 was the last time it was tied. You know, you want to start with what you think went wrong for the Cavs or more so right for the Pacers?
Let's start with, I think, the guy who was the best player on the floor in this game, just on how he performed. That's Victor Oladipo.
Absolutely.
32 points for him was, I don't know if you caught his post-game comments, but a guy who was very much saying, okay, I believe that this is just one game. He was very confident, and I think was happy with how guys like Miles Turner played, how just overall the team performed. But he was sensational in this game, hit a lot of threes where he dribbled into them and pulled up, was hitting these dagger threes to kind of put the Cavs away. I believe he hit the three-pointer that really kind of sealed the game for Indiana. Yeah. I think I'm putting him back up 17 in the fourth. Mike Prada at SB Nation wrote a really good piece about how Depot has this closing speed that's like a football term that he's like applied to basketball, and it's a really interesting piece. And Lockdown Cavs listeners, it'll be in the show notes. But
really good.
Yeah, really, really good piece. Mike is always a must-read, but Depot was awesome in this game. The Cavs, I don't know what they do. I don't know if he's going to shoot all those threes as well every time, but he was awesome in this game, and I don't know if the Cavs really had a good answer for him. And I think some of it comes from how they decided to defend him from the opening tip. I would have done differently than what they did if they're going to start Jeff Green, but Depot deserves a lot of credit for just being spectacular in this game.
You know, what we talked about Saturday was Oladipo's three-point shooting falling off, which is super funny because it led him and carried him in this game. And you talked about, which I'm glad you said, that a lot of them were off the dribble pull-ups. And for the first two or so months of the season, when Victor was really putting himself on the map as a star in the league, you know, he was hitting like 50% of his pull-up threes or something crazy. Like I had to write in a whole article about it because they were falling at such a high rate. And those just completely stopped going in for him. But in this game, you saw what happens when those go in is that, A, you know, when he comes around a screen, you have to guard him right away. And because he's so fast and has, as Prater described, that closing speed, it's so hard to get up on him because he can drive by you. And obviously hitting the three is even more dangerous than anything else. So, you know, when he's got that shot rolling, it really opens up a lot for him. And in this game, it really did too. And I am with you there. The defensive strategy on him was not at all what I expected. None of the Cavaliers' game plan was really what I expected. But specifically, the defense on Victor Oladipo was not what I expected. And he was able to do exactly what he wanted pretty much all the time.
I liked George Hill getting some minutes on him because Hill is longer, is a stronger guard, and I think can do okay in that matchup. But the whole reason the Cavs said they were starting Jeff Green, Ty Lue dropped Victor Oladipo by name as a guy that Jeff Green could guard. I think just not having Jeff Green on him was weird. I think the size could have at least made some kind of a difference, even if there's a quickness disadvantage there for the Cavs, but It was weird to me that if you're gonna play Jeff Green, why was he not on Depot from the beginning? I think Hood spent some time on him. I know LeBron got switched on him a couple times, but like I don't know exactly why Green wasn't on him a lot. And I don't know. I think like it's clear that Depot, the Cavs are gonna have a problem with him in this series if he keeps playing like this. But it was weird to me that Green wasn't on him, and I don't think the Cavs from the get-go stylistically match up. Like, I don't think Jeff Green on Booker was good. I think obviously Turner on Green was a big advantage for Indiana defensively. It really mucked up the paint in the half court, something I think was one of the biggest tactical blunders the Cavs made. I think, honestly, Indiana in this game, in a way I didn't expect, in a way that I don't even know if you expected this, they won the tactics of game one. And I think that's Nate McMillan has done a great job at this team. But Depot, I mean, brought it to another level. But I think tactically they won this game. He outcoached Ty Lue 100% in this game, and it wasn't close.
Yeah, and a lot of that, you know, this is like the most corny saying of all time, but it was like execution of the game plan on defense was so good. They really were forcing guys to the middle of the paint towards Turner at the rim. And there's a reason Turner was an overwhelming positive and Sabonis was an overwhelming negative, and that's because Turner's rim protection is so much better for that game plan. They were icing pick and rolls but forcing the ball handler into the pick and roll instead of away from the screen, which was interesting just to get him to go middle more. George Hill was getting panic feet every time he got close to Turner. And then they were really doing a good job staying in front of LeBron, even though they know they were going to get beat sometimes, just being in his way. You know, just all those things that you really want to do to stop the Cavs on defense, overload the strong side. All of it was working really well. And then offensively, you know, they're just pretty standard with their pick and rolls after their play dies all the time, but they work really well. There's a reason they keep pounding them down. And when Turner's being aggressive with his jumper like he was in this one, you know, he took that wing three in the first quarter that kind of set the tone that he was going to let him fly no matter what. There's a lot of spacing too. And, you know, they really just flowed with exactly what McMillan wanted them to do, and it was all working. So they stuck with it, and it was perfect.
defensively, I think from the the Cavs, LeBron wanted to get guys involved. I do think it was a optical and just direct decision on his part to try to get guys like Rodney Hood, guys like George Hill, get them comfortable, and it did really work in this game. But I mean, do you think in the end in the series is gonna kind of play LeBron like that, where like they're gonna just leave guys open? Obviously, Jeff Green's the ugly example of this, because they did not care a bit when he went up behind the 3-point line or leaving him open, as they frankly should not. But I mean, what do you think that is something that will continue? And if you were, and what do you think is if you're looking at picking apart Indiana's defense, and if you're the Cavs, what do you think is the counter to that? What if you were Ty Lue, what would your reaction to an Indiana did be?
Yeah, well, he kind of made one of the adjustments I was thinking about while the game was happening. So they, like I said just a second ago, they overload the strong side to make LeBron make a decision faster. Not like just like it's not a hard decision necessarily, but they just want to make it quicker by having a lot of guys in his area. Like sometimes Victor Oladipo would go into drop coverage the second LeBron would go around a screen, no matter who the screener was, just so he could be in the lane and in the area. And I found the perfect clip where LeBron did the right thing and threw it over the weak side. But because that pass takes so long to get there, Collison was already ready for the defense. So I think they're going to continue to do stuff like that with when LeBron has the ball and he's on the court. But yeah, they're not going to guard any Jeff Green, and Jeff Green was the guy on the weak side a lot of those possessions. So I thought there had to be another action off after the screen to keep the ball moving instead of just firing it across the weak side or setting up for something else all the time. And then the second half, when Nance was playing a little more, they did a lot of Spain pick and rolls, and I mean a lot, and those were working pretty well. Nance was really good to me in this game. And I thought that was something they should do more of. And a second thing is, you know, don't have LeBron be the ball handler every freaking time down the court. I mean, George Hill couldn't do anything in this game. He was pretty bad at shooting the ball in the lane. But they have to spread out the possessions a little bit better, I think, because the Pacers just got in a rhythm doing the same kind of sets over and over again on the defensive end.
Yeah, I think the something that the Cavs, Ty Lue said he didn't love, was not having the second ball handler out there with LeBron. Mm-hmm. George Hill's injury, a potential injury, is going to be a big factor for Wednesday. We're recording this on Monday night, so it's too early for us to know. But Hill, on that screen where he got absolutely clocked, I think, by Trevor Booker, and that shouldn't have been a foul. I said this on the recap show, but that should have just that's on the Cavs more than it's on the
base. You got to call it out. Yeah.
Yeah, like that was just bad communication on the Cavs' part. George Hill, they said after the game that they thought he was going to play. Tyler wasn't as declarative on Monday at his availability. So Hill's not available. That's going to put some interesting questions for Tyler to answer. For one, you know, he just openly said he doesn't want to have Jordan Clarkson play point guard. Does that mean he has to? Does this mean more Jose Calderon minutes? Does that mean, you know, do they give JR a ball handling responsibilities or Rodney Hood? There's questions to have the answer if George Hill doesn't play, because they're really counting on him to be that guy so LeBron can get in the post. Because I think that for the Cavs, the two LeBron center things I would do was get him in the post more. I think there's no one in, like, Lance Stephenson, for all of his gusto, is shook every time LeBron gets inside on him and is just has no shot. Indiana doesn't really have anyone, I think, that has a shot. Bogdanovich, for all of his trying, doesn't have a shot at stopping LeBron.
That number was his two, best defensive game of the year, and he still never stopped him.
Exactly. Number two, I think getting LeBron moving and getting him moving faster up and down the court and in the half court, just getting him on the roll is just going to be make him hard to stop. Get into the line a lot, I think, is what I would do. I also just think Nance is going to play a big role in this series, and I would start him in game two. I don't know if they're going to do that, but I think if it would force Turner to guard him. I mean, Nance is a good cutter. He moves off ball. The Cavs had a lot of success getting him easy dunks in this game when LeBron would get inside. The Pacers are doubling him immediately inside. That's going to give Nance a lot of open dunks. LeBron's going to make that pass and make it successfully 9 out of 10 times. The Cavs will live with that. I think it's effective offense. So that's what I would do. But I think that Indiana would might have some counters to that, and I would like to see what they would do. But to me, that is the obvious counter for what Indiana did to the Cavs in the game one would be. I would start with LeBron, obviously, but then I think Nance over Green, it just makes too much sense. But I don't know if we're going
to
get that.
Nance was good and Green was bad in this first game. Like, to me, it's that simple. Like, Green, I thought you even said this, and I kind of thought the purpose of him starting was to guard Vic and then to just not be, like, completely useless on offense. And he did neither of those things. He was totally horrible on offense, and he didn't guard Victor. So why was he even starting? It just made no sense.
100%. 100%. I think he's the obvious. I think if they're going to keep this in rotation and probably have him play, I really do think Nance is going to have to start. I don't think it's going to be particularly close. And I think that is going to be like a fascinating thing to see what Tyloo does. And it's probably not something we're going to find out about until 5:15 on Wednesday. We're just not going to know.
Yeah, and I answered your question kind of poorly, but I think for Pacers adjustments, if they do go Nance starting, I think they'll keep the same matchups and just have Turner guard Nance. And I agree with you that it will be harder for him to keep moving that much as opposed to when you're guarding Green, he could be more stationary. But at the same time, I don't think he's going to chase him out very far. So I still think he can be, you know, the guy they funnel everybody to in the paint. It'll just be, you know, he might be a half step behind on some of those plays, which will still give the Cavs probably 6 to 10 more points.
Yeah, I think that would be a good place to start. One other thing with Indiana, what did you think of how Turner played in this game and how the Cavs approached him?
Turner himself, I would say, played the way that everyone thought he would have to play for the Pacers to win, which was awesome. You know, a lot of shots away from the basket were falling for him. He wasn't afraid to shoot, and he was hitting the glass. You know, he led the team in rebounds, which, you know, if you don't watch the team very much, you don't know that that's not really his thing. Is the board. So the fact that he was able to actually battle in the post and hit his jumper was exactly what you want from him. The way the Cavs handled him was kind of weird. You know, Jeff Green kept trying to drive past him. Turner's not that kind of guy. Who he'll get beat sometimes, but he can stay with you there. And then on defense, you know, that was what we talked about Saturday. The plan was always going to be to use Turner to keep the Cavs big man away from the rim and open up some stuff around the basket. And when Turner's hitting his shots like that, you know, it works perfectly. So the interior defense for Cleveland fell apart a little bit when he was stretched out like that, and they used him in the role perfectly and he executed. And that's exactly what he had to do to change the series.
Yeah. So let's look at the other side of this with the Cavs in particular. We've kind of hit on Jeff Green. I don't know. I don't want to beat a dead power forward, whatever there, because there's just not much more to say about Jeff Green other than I think he was awful. And I think if he's going to play, he has to just be a lot better and be used differently. When you look at the Cavs and you look how they played and you look at when they had success and you look at what they could do for game 2, what for you would be some of the other adjustments you think they need to make? I think if Kyle Korver is good to go, I think he has to play more than 4 minutes. Tyloo apparently says he didn't get to play his favorite lineup. I that's perplexing to me for depending on who it probably involves Korver, but
I was going to say, I think you just put 2 and 2 together there.
Yeah, I think Korver has to play a lot, and I think it's defensively an issue, but I think he's going to have to play a lot for them to be at their best offensively, which leads into the defensive limitations and who's going to defend Oladipo and everything, but I think that's kind of where we're headed.
I think Kevin Love takes more than 2 two-pointers next game, guarantee. That is shocking to me that the second-best player on the Cavs only shoots 2 times inside the arc. I think Korver plays more if he's healthy. I know I thought that was the reason he didn't play a lot in the first game, but I tweeted that when I saw Tyloo's quote about him not playing his best five. I think Korver has to be in it. There's no other reason you wouldn't do that in a game of that magnitude. And I think that Korver would open up a lot for them, you know, just because without him, besides JR, they don't have a guy who can create a good-looking three for himself. And another thing, this is the obvious one, that's not really a game plan thing, but, I mean, the three just has to fall for them. For you guys eventually against the Pacers. I mean, they only shot 28% from three against the Pacers in the regular season, but it's a new team, so I'm not going to look at that too much. But, you know, Calderon is not going to miss all three. Clarkson probably won't miss all three. Korver won't miss all his. You know, LeBron, Jeff Green, like all those guys all missed all their threes. I don't think that's going to happen again. And part of that, too, is, like I said, in the regular season, it wasn't really working out. And that stat people were throwing around, like, oh, maybe the Pacers know how to defend them. But if you watch the game, like, a lot of those looks were just open shots that didn't go in. So if they keep doing those things, I think they'll get more points from that as well.
Yeah, you had Rodney Hood missing those couple corner threes in the fourth quarter. That was a problem. You know, I'm very curious to kind of just see what they decide is good lineup options, if they decide to change anything significantly, because I think that's going to tell us a lot. Tyloo, I think Tyloo is one of his best qualities as a coach, really is his in-game adjustments. He's a guy that I think – or in-between game adjustments, excuse me. He's not the most flexible guy in the 48 minutes of a game, but he's a very – I think he's an underrated tactician in between games and when he's doing things – and has time to evaluate things and think things through. I think that is where we're going to see if the Cavs have a big adjustment aside from just playing better. That's that. I think we're going to see it Wednesday just because I think he has the time in the ability to implement things and to watch film and actually do things correctly than he would if it was in a game. It's just not something he's great at. And I think Wednesday, in that, for that sense, it will, I think, set a lot of the tone for the rest of the series, just because it's on the Cavs to make these adjustments. Indiana did exactly what it should have done and played to the best of its ability in game one. It's on the Cavs to make all these adjustments.
It really is. And I'll be interesting to see if a guy who didn't play, which is Tristan Thompson, a guy who didn't play very much plays more, because I think Thompson really could do some stuff that, you know, you didn't get from Jeff Green. I might think Thompson, even if he gets just 5 to 10 minutes, could be more valuable than Green was.
The concern I have is where, like, at least with Jeff Green, I think when he's, it's an issue when he's just standing there and not moving and whatnot. But I mean, with Thompson, they're going to ignore him too. And he just hasn't been as good of a cutter. Green's probably a better defender at this point, based on who he's going to guard. That would be my concern with Tristan, but I don't disagree. He only played in garbage time. And I think that was kind of the one thing in game one that was kind of noticeable. And maybe we didn't talk about enough because of just how the game ended, but it's not a bad idea. But the problem is, like, you know, you can't play him with Nance. And if Nance played 30 minutes in this game and he plays really well, maybe he deserves that again. It's hard to find minutes for Tristan. Maybe 8 minutes is enough. I almost wonder if Korver's hurt and if they need some energy and they need just some defense and some – I wonder if we see Jetty Osman, the rookie who is, you know, obviously has his limitations and stuff, but I wonder if we'll see him in game two.
My thought with Thompson is just, like, if the Pacers' defense is playing this well, you know, maybe the answer is as simple as just more possessions going at him, and that's what Thompson could give you that – they didn't really. I mean, Kevin Love was a monster on the glass, but I think Thompson too could really help in that regard. And yeah, Chetty, you know, a good wing defender is never a bad thing to have out there, especially with his youthful exuberance and effort he likes to give out. So I think Chetty could be a good option too. I think there's a lot of rotation questions for the Cavs, and I think, like, that's the biggest question mark to me, is less so adjustments and more so what guys actually play.
Yeah, I agree. And just look, the Cavs also just in this game did not get out to a good rhythm. This is the team that came out of the gate. Kevin Love missed those two threes. I don't think they ever really settled in, you know, to any situation where they really got into a flow. Kevin Love missing those two threes, I think, really, really just didn't work. Like, I think from the beginning, you know, I think the other aspect of Kevin Love in this game is just, like, if he plays really well and can get going early, I think it does benefit everybody. And if he can get going early and score on Booker, who's a good post defender, is a very strong post defender, and as is Thad Young, who I think was very good in this game. You know, I wonder if in that sense we do see Kevin Love get forced a little more just to try to get him going. Because I think if he has a good game early and Hill gets going early, that will make things happen. But at the same time, I wonder if we just see nuclear LeBron in game two.
Can he go more nuclear than he did? I mean,
that was not, like, it's crazy to say because he had a triple double. That was not, like, a very good LeBron game.
Oh, I know that. I mean, like, it just seems like when he plays 44 minutes and has a triple double, it's hard for him to do much more than just make more of his shots than what he did. Because, you know, like, his threes, if all of his threes go in, he shoots 11 of 17 and has 36 points. And, you know, like, he still was so good to me. And, like, everything the Pacers do is created around, you know, stop him and then figure the rest out, or, like, get past him on defense and on offense and figure the rest out. You know, it's crazy that was not even a good game for him, not even close to a good game for him.
Yeah. I 100% would agree with that. You know, the one other thing about this game that I just don't know is I don't know exactly what I would expect to see from the Cavs, in the sense that we just have not seen this team go through adversity, right? The Indiana Pacers seem like a team that are very mentally tough. And I don't want to say the Cavs are weak by any stretch of the imagination or have, you know, any lacking there, but this is a team that has not been through the ringer in the way that these past teams have. I just wonder if the Cavs have to kind of, they had to take that lump in game one. I think mentally and how they feel in game two is just going to tell us a lot about this team. And I that's probably a little takey, but I think we don't know exactly what the mental wherewithal of this Cavs team is yet. And I think that's just kind of fascinating.
I think the playoffs are pretty takey in general. And I'm with you there about the mental thing. I mean, I heard from some Pacers guys that you know, like last year, they weren't really hyped up for the playoffs. You know, they just kind of felt like they got through the motions and got there. And they were just playing, you know, they knew they weren't going to win against the Cavs. This year, I heard everyone, you know, pumped up, ready to go, felt like they had a good chance. You know, they have this shock the world memo and mentality going on. And I really think they have the mental edge, like you just said so far. And how you respond is really shows a lot about you. And I think that, you know, when you have a leader like LeBron, there's certainly an obvious manner in which it gets turned around mentally. But I'll be fascinated to see how that actually goes down.
Wrap it up on this, I guess. What is your prediction for game two? I mean, just what are you expecting? A close game, a back and forth game that gets decisive late? I mean, just what are you expecting out of game two? Because I honestly don't know what to expect. I don't think I'm going to know until we get 6 minutes in and see the Cavs look good or look bad.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be a closer game. I think there's more the Cavs can change to do well than the Pacers can change to do better. And in that way, I think that the game will be closer than 18. And I think that just in general, it makes sense that it will be closer than 18. And I think it'll be back and forth. If I had to pick a style that would suit this the best, and I think the Cavs win by probably 5-ish, if I had to guess.
When you look at the series going back to Indiana, which will be on Friday, it's a quicker turnaround than we were than we got for game two. How have Indiana? I'm just curious about this. How did Pacers fans and just the Pacers community you interact with take game one? Like, what was just the vibe after game one?
Pretty much the first 5 minutes were hype, and then the next 3 hours were screw the national media for never paying attention to us. And then everyone was just excited that they actually won a game and have some validation that this team is actually as good as they think. But I think everyone's super excited, you know, mostly because it's like the hometown guys. Everybody loves Lance. Everybody loves Victor. I don't think there's anyone like disliked really by fans, and that's sort of rare. You know, since the Brawl days, there's always been like a kind of weird vibe around the team. But I think this year that's finally gone, and they bucked that trend. And, you know, everyone's just really excited that they're A, doing well, and B, doing well against the best player ever.
It was a completely different series than last year. I can't wait, though. I am very amped for game two. I'm very curious to see what the mood is like for the Cavs, the mood is like in the arena, the mood is like for the Pacers. I think I speak for you in saying that this is about as interesting as we could have hoped for, and that in itself is more than I think we could have asked for.
Are Cavs fans worried, or do they think it was a fluke?
You know, I think they kind of think that was a bad game, but I think there is some general concern about the team. But I don't think it's they're going to lose the series, but I do think it's okay. What is this team actually made of? And I think there is some queasiness that has come out, but I think it could get worse if game two goes badly.
I agree. I think game two is the swing point now. I said that about game one too, so who knows?
Yeah, absolutely.
Want to promote Fear the Sword again?
Yeah, Fear the Sword, SB Nation's Cavs site. Check us out and check out everything we're doing. We have a ton of people covering stuff every day. You'll have the latest Cavs news going on over there. And just tell my listeners what everything you have going on so they can know where to go find the best, some really good Pacers content on the web before game two.
You can follow me at TEastNBA. I'm sorry, I'm one of those losers who has NBA in his name, but I only tweet about basketball, so I'm going to keep it there. And I do troll Mike Zavagna whenever he makes fun of the Pacers. So
hey, I just want to tell Mike, if he listens to this, that 110 defensive rating is bad, and I will not. I'm sorry, you can't spin that.
Mike is so smart, so I feel bad.
Yeah, Mike's awesome. I love having him on staff, but yeah, 110 defensive rating, can't spin that.
Oh man, yeah, but 8.9 seconds is where all the stuff goes up. We got a ton of great stuff coming up about the first game. Ben Gibson making us some awesome graphics. And if you're in Indy, I'll have a story in the West Indianapolis Community News coming out on Wednesday for game day. So get pumped for that.
Cool. This has been Locked On Cavs, Locked On Pacers. Have a good one, y'all.